This meeting is now being recorded.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call to order their meeting of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and is publicly broadcast. So for those of you, when you do wish to be heard on any issue, if you would please identify yourself as who the speaker is so that those of us on the call and members of the public who are listening know who is speaking. And at this time, I would ask Zlatko if you could take roll for us.
Certainly. Thank you, Judge Earl. We have Judge Began.
I believe Judge Began is not able to attend, but I believe that Rebecca Fleming, who is the CEO of Stanislaus, working with Judge Began and a member of the Budget Advisory Committee, has her proxy for any action items today.
And I am on the line. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Okay. Judge Boris.
Present.
Judge Chouteau. Judge Clay. Judge Cope.
I'm here.
Judge DeSantos.
All right, Don Clay calling in.
All right, thank you, Judge Clay.
Did we have Renee Judge Chouteau calling in?
I'm sorry, who was that?
Chouteau.
Thank you, Judge. Do we have Judge DeSantos? We have Judge Earl here, we know. Judge Wesley?
Here.
Thank you, Judge. Judge Good?
Yes.
Thank you, Judge Hicks?
Present.
Thank you. Judge Johnson?
Here.
Judge Masunaga?
Here.
Judge Slough?
Present.
Judge Trent Acosta?
Here.
Judge Walsh?
Present.
Before I start with the CEOs, did Judge DeSantos join yet? Okay. We have Sherry Carter.
Here.
Jake Chatters.
Here.
Rick Feldstein.
Here.
Don Fitton.
Here.
We have Rebecca Fleming, we've heard. Kimberly Flenner.
Here.
Sean Landry.
Here.
Debbie Norrie.
Here.
Mike Planet.
Yes.
Mike Roddy.
Here.
Ryan Taylor.
Here.
Mary Beth Hogg.
Here.
I heard Tanya is here. We're going to
yes.
Yes. Chris Volkers.
Here.
David Yamasaki.
Here.
And then advisory members from the Judicial Council, Jody Patel, Kurt Child,
here,
Kurt Sutherland, and myself, Zlatko Todorovic. The only one, only a voting member that is not present and accounted for in some form or fashion is Judge DeSantos. Have you joined since we started roll, Judge? Nope. There's one voting member missing, and at this moment we have Jody Patel and Kurt Sutherland not present on the line.
So thank you, Zlatko. That does mean we do have a quorum, and before we take any action, I'll see if Judge DeSantos has joined the call. The first item of business is approval of the minutes from our November 5th, 2014 meeting. There was revised minutes were sent out yesterday at 4:59 p.m. by Stephen Chang. So the first set of minutes that you got are not the minutes we'll be approving. They would be the revised minutes sent out at 4:59 p.m. last night. Does anyone have a motion regarding the minutes?
Just to let you know, this is Zlatko. The minutes were updated for a misspelling of my name and Judge Good's name. So it's the only difference from the original minutes that was submitted.
I'll move approval. Chouteau.
Second, Walsh.
All right, Judge Chouteau moves approval. Judge Wall seconds. Any discussion on the minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? The minutes are approved. The next item on the agenda is item number one, court-appointed dependent. Hello?
Judge Earl, if I may, this is Zlatko.
Yes.
We did not receive any public comments or written comments, just so the members know that fact.
Thank you. Court-appointed dependency counsel funding reallocation, it is an action item. As you know, we had a work group that met by telephone a number of occasions to discuss this item. It was led by Sherry Carter, so I would ask Sherry if you could walk us through the action item on our agenda today in this regard.
Okay. I want to just give a little bit of background to explain why we're here. The funding for Dependency Council was based on a fiscal year 96-97 snapshot, and it has not been based on workload, and so as a result, as things have changed since that point in time, the funding has not been adjusted to accommodate the workload changes. The goal of my subcommittee was to try to find ways to reallocate funding, unspent funds this fiscal year, in an effort to get funds as quickly as possible to those counties that are significantly underfunded. And we will also be working on a funding methodology based on workload, hopefully to have it ready for the council to approve so that we can start implementation with next fiscal year. But if you turn to page 3, you'll start the recommendations. The first one is that we did identify some funds, about $550,000, that we estimate will be unspent this fiscal year and would like to have them reallocated to the courts that are underfunded. I'm going to ask Dawn to go through the, well, the first question that begins on page 4 is how to decide which courts are eligible to receive funding, and we recommend the 2008 model. There were two models previously used. We recommend the 2008 model because it is the most inclusive model, and we thought that was important to do. And Judge Earl, I don't know if you want to take these one at a time or go through the explanation and then take a vote after that.
Why don't we take them one at a time? As I understand, the first recommendation is merely to recommend a process to the Judicial Council to reallocate the dependency court-appointed funds that are estimated to remain unspent in this fiscal year. Is that right?
That's right. And we would do the first, assuming the council approves it, we would do the first reallocation as soon as the council has approved it, and then we would use the same methodology at the toward the end of the fiscal year to capture, again, any additional unspent funds at that point. So that would be the first recommendation.
Let me open it up for questions or discussions, the issue being should we recommend a process to reallocate unspent funds at various points in the fiscal year, the first one being in January and then thereafter sometime in April, between April and June. Are there questions about that? Well, then, do I have a motion as to that first recommendation?
So moved.
So moved, Don Clay.
Judge Clay moved. Who's the second?
Second, Wesley.
Wesley seconded it.
Judge Wesley seconds. Any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Is Judge DeSantos on the line?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, Judge DeSantos. All right, the motion carries then.
So the second, with that now approved, the second proposal would be regarding how to decide which courts are eligible to be considered under the reallocation. Begins on page 4, it's item 2. There were two methods that have previously been approved by the Judicial Council or the E&P Committee for determining eligibility. We looked at both of those, and we recommend the 2008 model because it is the most inclusive model. So I'll stop there in case there's questions.
Any questions on the two models that the committee reviewed and what their recommendation is. I should note, I believe, Sherry, that your recommendation is only for the for this current fiscal year, and then you'll work, am I correct that the work
yes.
group will continue? It doesn't look like either of these is the ideal way to reallocate, but given that we're almost halfway through the fiscal year, is this your recommendation just for the current fiscal year and you'll continue
yes.
to work on a plan
all
for next year?
All of these recommendations are really just for this fiscal year. It's not ideal because one-time money doesn't solve any long-term issues or problems, but it does provide relief to the counties that are underfunded as quickly as possible. So we felt it was important to reallocate these funds now and then and while we're working on an ongoing funding methodology for the future. So, yes, answer is that it is just for this fiscal year.
Any questions about the second recommendation?
This is Planet. I recommend we adopt that recommendation.
Who was that?
Mike Planet.
Mike Planet moves the motion to adopt recommendation number two.
This is Judge Maldonado. Could I just offer a comment before we finish with
yes.
Okay. I am concerned that sometimes with the language that we use and that describing these as the underfunded dependency courts, because it sort of suggests that the other courts are overfunded, which I don't think that's the case. And I would suggest that we use a more neutral type of terms, which is, we're doing this allocation. Instead of using underfunded, say something like, below estimated need or something like that. But when we use the terminology like underfunded, just like I'm going to suggest that we delete the terms donor courts from the WAFM language, because I think this language tends to come back at us, especially in the media, because they're not understanding how we're looking at it. So I'm going to be asking that we be perhaps instead of the motion discussed as underfunded, to use some kind of more neutral terminology, which you could say, based on the estimated, the differential between the estimated need and the funding or something like that.
And so Judge Masanaga, that while the body of the report does use the term underfunded courts, the recommendation itself does not. The recommendation is that those courts receiving less than 90% of the need as calculated by the case loan funding model receive any reallocation.
And Judge Earl, I understand that. I'm just saying that in our materials in general and our discussions, I'm just going to suggest that we not use the term underfunded so much as using a more specific description just like you stated here.
Okay.
And so this is Marcia Slough.
Yes.
And I would just echo that comment. I think our words are so important. It's really the only tool that we have to perform our skills set. We don't have hammers. We have words. And I think it's very simple. And I think it's consistent with what you folks accomplished, all of you who worked on the WAFM model, that what we are doing is moving towards allocations, not only from the trial court trust fund, but from other special allocations like this, to making them workload dependent. And I think Judge Masanaga's statement is very well placed, that what we're moving to is funding based on workload. And so I wholeheartedly support her comments.
This is Judge Walsh.
Yes.
I do too. I think Judge Masanaga and Judge Sal make a good point. Judge Sal and I have worked out a compromise on the issue of underfunded as it relates to WAFM. We're trying to use the term contributor courts and recipient courts. We think that's less loaded.
No, well, actually, I mean, we had that conversation, but I don't think it is contributing courts.
Right,
it
need
is
a better
money,
word, but I agree with you.
Money that's based on workload. It's very simple. It's being allocated based upon workload needs.
I would also argue it's not recipient courts.
Well, hold on a minute. Is Judge Walsh, are you finished?
Yes.
Judge Wesley.
All right. So hold on. I heard from
the motion. Can we get back to the motion?
Yes.
This has nothing to do with the motion.
Okay. I heard Judge Cope. Did you want to address the motion?
I wanted to second it.
All right. Judge Cope is the second. So, is there any further discussion on recommendation number two? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Is there any opposed? The motion carries.
Okay, thank you. So the third recommendation, now we've talked about how to decide which courts are eligible. Now the next question is how to reallocate these unspent funds. And the committee considered three different methodologies. They start on page four. You'll see table one reflects one formula. Table two on page six shows the next one, and so on. We actually recommended formula three because it gets more of the unspent money to those counties that are farther away from their funding need. So we recommend formula three, and if you want me to go through or Don to go through, I'm assuming Don's on the line.
Yes, I am.
Okay. So if you'd like us to walk you through the three different options, we're happy to do that, but the subcommittee recommended formula three be used because it takes the court, it actually considers the caseload funding need minus the allocation, and it gets more money to those courts who are farther away from their need based on workload.
Would any of the committee members like Don Will, who's on the line with us, to walk through the three different formulas that the committee, the work group considered? If you do, we're happy to do that. I don't hear any request. Is there then a motion as to recommendation number three?
The motion to approve the recommendation of the committee.
And the recommendation is to use a formula that reallocates funding to courts based on each eligible court's proportion of actual need. So
yes,
actual dollars of need is calculated by subtracting funding need from base funding. That's
right.
The motion.
Yes,
is there a second?
Formula three.
Is there a second to the motion?
Yamasaki
seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries.
Okay, so the next two recommendations are to recommend to the council that for the $550,000 that has been identified as potential as unspent funds, to recommend that we reallocate that in January based on the formula that we just approved. And I would add that number five is related in that if there are also unspent funds identified in April or May, that we would reallocate those funds using the same formula at that time as well. So I'll stop there in case there's any questions.
We could probably take items one and four and five together. Are there any questions? Any questions about recommendations four and five? Is there a motion to approve recommendations four and five?
This is Rebecca Fleming. I'll move that we approve four and five together.
Planet seconds.
Who is that?
Planet.
Mike Planet seconds. Any discussion on recommendations four and five?
Judge Earl, this is Jake Chatter.
Yes. Jake.
One clarifying point here is we just want to make sure it's clear that we're going to be working to project the estimated year-end expenditures in April and June. And so that was just one item that the subcommittee talked about as being clear that this isn't what's spent or necessarily encumbered, as there are some costs that we can anticipate coming in May and June, but because it might be conflict counsel or something else aren't encumbered yet. So that's why we wanted to be clear. This is to do a process to estimate year-end expenditures that will include both encumbrances and projections.
I think that's the understanding, right, Sherry?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. That's why we're waiting until April, May to actually go through that work.
Any other questions or comments about the motion? All in favor of the motion to approve recommendations 4 and 5, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries.
The last is, I'm not really sure, an action item. It is, I guess it's a statement that these reallocations are just one time this year, because as previously mentioned, we will start working on a funding methodology, hopefully to have it to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee in spring and for the council so that it will be ready to be implemented next fiscal year. So I'm not really sure we need to vote on 6, Judge Earl. I think that's been the understanding all the way through the motions.
So I just want to make clear that the motions that we approved today have to do only with the reallocation of funding. It does not have to do with a new funding allocation methodology, which your group will continue to work through, correct?
Exactly. So I think that really concludes it, because these are one-time reallocations, and we will come back to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, hopefully in spring, with a proposal for an ongoing funding methodology that will help to start reallocate some of the funding based on workload.
Do we want to amend recommendation number 6 to reflect that the items approved today are only for the current fiscal year? Does anyone think we need to do that?
This is Judge Matsunaga. I think that might clarify the situation.
Does anyone wish to make that motion then, that the items approved today would only be for fiscal year 14-15 and the work group will continue to work through issues related to court-appointed dependency council?
So Mrs. Moved. Slough, I would so move.
I heard Walsh move and Slough second. Any further questions or discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Sherry, so can you kind of give us an update on where your group is on working or what work lies ahead of you? I know we've touched on it a little bit, and your estimated time frame.
Yes. There are several things that we need to do to look at a new funding methodology, going back even to what statistics are currently being used. It will be quite a process, because the statistics that are currently used are from the State Child Welfare Department, and so we need to validate whether or not those are the right statistics to use, or should we use the GPSIS numbers. We need to consider where counties are in contracts. We need to decide how to deal with regional expenses. We need to look at a variety of things. So it's actually quite a big piece of work. And we haven't quite, we've identified the factors that we need to consider in a new allocation methodology. I have a list that goes down to J, so it's quite long. Don and I have talked about the need for a live meeting in January, which has not yet been scheduled, and so that's where we are.
Any questions of Sherry on the work that lies ahead for the work group? And we hope to have that back before the Budget Committee in the spring and to the Judicial Council before the end of the fiscal year, correct, Sherry?
Yes, that's the goal. We'd love to have it ready so that we could start phasing it in with next fiscal year.
All right. Thank you. And thank you to the work group for your work on this issue. The next item on the agenda is final reduction allocations, item 2, related to 1% cap on fund balance carryover. I believe that this is an issue, an item that Mary Beth Todd and Zlatko are going to address. Is that correct?
Yes. This is Mary Beth.
Go right ahead.
Okay. Zlatko, did you want to address just the preliminary and final piece, and then I can talk about what the working group addressed, or how do you want to handle that?
Certainly. Yes. If the folks recall the process that's been that is established in statute, the council is required to make preliminary allocations in July after the budget is enacted that take into account what, if any, funds exist above the 1% cap that's established in 77203. The council did adopt, based on those preliminary figures, approximately $2 million in allocation reductions at that time. Statute then requires that final allocations be made in January based on final fiscal information, financial information presented by the trial courts. In order to evaluate those figures, the council approved a committee made up of two members of the Budget Advisory Committee and the chair and vice chair of SEAC, as well as myself, to look at the data that was submitted with respect to encumbrances, restricted funds that are related to the 16 categories that are in 77203, prepayments and whatnot. Based on that review, we did contact a number of courts. Some in between that process contacted us to update their figures. In some cases, we, in our review, looked at some of the court submissions and sent emails out to over a dozen courts and did have either phone calls with them or email exchanges with them about their issues. And after all was said and done, we came to the conclusion that there were no need to recommend anything other than what was already submitted by the trial courts. As you can see on page 10, the final figure is $1,711,712. That is consistent with each of the court submissions. Again, there were no recommended adjustments. Everything was worked out with each court prior to the finalization of this process. And so that's what our recommendation to you is, to look at those, and then we will take that to the council in January. Mary Beth, I think, will now speak to the discussion that we had and the issues that we saw sort of systematically as part of our review.
Right. Thanks, Zlatko. So as you recall, probably late last winter, this committee put together a variety of guidelines on encumbrances, and I think the financial policies address prepayments. And at the time that we were doing all that, the question was raised, you know, how are we going to make sure we're all following the guidelines? And so that's, for the most part, what this committee was doing, was just making sure everybody was following the guidelines. For the most part, we relied on staff to take a look at the prepayments and encumbrances, because as you can imagine, there were thousands of those as we were all, you know, making plans to spend down our fund balances and make sure that we used them to the greatest advantage to our courts and communities as we possibly could. So, for the most part, we looked at any kind of anything that looked like it was not falling within the guidelines. For the most part, for encumbrances and prepayments, they did. Everything looked relatively good. The few things, as Zlatko mentioned, Staff did reach out to a couple of courts. There were some technical errors, but in the end, it wasn't going to make, didn't have a net result or impact on what their ending fund balance was. It was, you know, should it have been an encumbrance? Should it have been a prepayment? Either way, it didn't change the end result. Then we took a look also at the guidelines for the restricted, statutorily restricted funds. And as you recall, those guidelines identified some of the statutorily restricted funds as funds that you shouldn't see large accruals in because the purpose of the funding is to reimburse court costs. So we took a look at those funds and looked at where courts seem to have an unusual accrual, if there was a substantial accrual. We did identify, I can't even remember exactly how many there were, I think maybe about 10 courts, that where they had some funds that appeared to be higher than you would expect. We asked each of them to describe, you know, what created the accrual and, you know, what their plan is for that accrual. All of the courts responded. We took a look at them. Every court seemed to have a unique circumstance, and we agreed that it would not be appropriate attribute those accruals to fund balance such that it would change their ending fund balance. What we did identify, though, is that, you know, with this new new world of having to spend down our fund balances and the importance of encumbrances and prepayments and looking at these statutorily restricted funds, that some additional education and training is warranted, and we'll be working with the TCAF staff and hopefully the Chief Financial Officers Roundtable to continue to provide that type of training. We also will reach out to a few of the courts who had some unique circumstances. We'll reach out to them. Staff will reach out to them individually to talk about how to address their unique situation. And it was just very important to the committee to ensure that we were doing our due diligence in reviewing all of these accounts, that we are reaching out to courts so that they understand going forward what the expectation is, what the guidelines require, so that that we're all moving forward in the same manner. We did have one issue that came before us, not necessarily, it came to us through an audit issue. It had to do with an accounts receivable. That was an interesting issue only because of the fact that, you know, the importance of how you book those accounts receivable that you may or may not anticipate receiving shortly after the close of the fiscal year was an interesting issue. We looked at it very thoroughly and very confident that the court had appropriately not designated it as an accounts receivable due to a variety of reasons. But it did get it on our radar that we probably do need to do more education and training on how you appropriately weigh and consider when to book an accounts receivable, especially when it's coming to the close of the fiscal year. So there were some interesting educational opportunities that came out through this process. In the end, we did not recommend any change to any court's fund balance, and so you have that recommendation before you to approve, basically just approving the ending fund balances and adjustments that are reflected before you. Does anybody have any questions on that process?
I just have one question.
Is that Judge Masanaga?
I'm just looking at the numbers, the differential between the preliminary versus the bolded final reduction, the second to the last column. That's the $1.7 million. Because it looks like in Mendocino that was a swing. Do you know, I mean, I don't know, maybe the detail of that, but you just said that there it looked like the preliminary reductions in all cases were higher than the final, and it's not true for that court.
It was just a matter of their updated submission and final figures. There was nothing based on any action of the committee.
Okay.
They're just final reconciliation of the figures.
And is it your perspective, too, after you've gone through this process this time around, that all the courts are very clear on what what the restricted funds?
I think that's what Mary Beth was saying, is that we have a lot of training to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's still, I think everybody did a great job given the circumstance, and this is the first year of the effort. But what it did reveal was that there are, you know, while there was nothing that warranted an adjustment, the definitions of prepayments, the way in which some of the restricted funds should or shouldn't be accumulated, we need to do more training and helping folks better understand and manage as they head towards fiscal years. There's certain funds we felt should be sort of net zero at the end of the year or some small amount. There's issues where when do you go and check with your county when you have funds available to you. We came across issues where there are cost plans for reimbursements and reimbursable costs that are old and out of date and need to be updated. So, like I said, there are ongoing training issues, but overall, everybody, I think, did a great job given the circumstances, given that this is the first year, given all of the transactions that had to take place at the end of the fiscal year. But to say that it was, you know, that there is a, that everybody got it all, we need to continue this. I mean, obviously, our hope is that we're not in this in the next few years as we get a change in the 1% process. But as it stands now, you know, everybody is, you know, generally compliant, and but we need to have further training.
Any other questions for Mary Beth or Zlotko on this issue?
And it's Mary Beth. I just want to thank the other members of our committee.
Absolutely.
Judge Good, Rick Feldstein, Brian Taylor. All did the heavy lifting.
Right. We had very good conversations about all of these issues. So it was good work by all of the members of the committee and the staff as well.
So the recommendation, Mary Beth, appears at the bottom of page 9 of our materials, correct?
Correct.
Is there a motion to move that recommendation?
This is Rick Feldstein. I'll move it.
I'll second it. This is good.
Any further discussion on that issue? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. The motion carries. I'm now going to go just a little bit out of order to accommodate some timing issues we have. I'm going to turn your attention to item 6, which is a discussion item regarding AB 1657 dealing with court interpreters. There are no materials for this item, but I believe we have Donna Hershkowitz on the line to address this issue.
Yes, thank you so much, Judge Earl. I just wanted to give you an update. As you know, last January, the Judicial Council had authorized the use of unused interpreter savings for civil matters in cases where the parties are indigent. And then the council asked your body, your advisory committee, to come up with a to present to it a recommendation, which you did in April of 2014, on how that how the amount of unused savings would be allocated amongst the 58 trial courts. There was a the reason that in January the Judicial Council's authorization for the unused savings was limited to indigent parties is because that was the extent of the authority that we had under the law to provide interpreters. Well, the law has now changed. Effective January 1, AB 1657, which was enacted, would authorize courts to provide interpreters to all parties in all civil matters, regardless of income. And it sets forth a priority and preference order when the courts don't have sufficient resources to provide interpreters for all persons. And so I wanted to provide you this update that at the end of this week, the court interpreters panel is going to the Judicial Council to ask them to just update the January action that said that you could use the unused interpreter savings for civil matters where the parties are indigent, and instead say that as of January 1, the council's policy is to use the interpreter savings consistent with the requirements of the newly enacted statute. It in no way changes the action that your body took with regard to the allocation amongst the courts or the regions, but rather just says, What the council did in January was all we had the authority to do as of that time. The law has now changed. We now have greater authority, and so the council, frankly, needs to act consistently with the requirements now of AB 1657, which sets out the priority and preferences for how you would use less than full funding to provide interpreters and civil parties.
So, Judge Earle, this is Sherry Carter. Can I just ask us to clarify one thing that Donna just said?
Sure.
The statute doesn't make it a requirement. It gives us permission.
Absolutely.
And I think those words are important because you had said requirement. It's not a requirement. It gives us permission.
If I said requirement, I completely misspoke. You're absolutely correct, Sherry. And the statute authorizes courts to provide interpreters in these cases. To the extent we do, it sets forth this priority order that we would need to follow.
Any questions for Donna? All right. Thank you, Donna, for the update.
Thank you so much, Judge Earle, for moving us around in the agenda.
Sure. The next item on the agenda is item 3, budget change proposal for funding trial court security costs. It is an action item, and materials can be found report can be found on page 15 of our materials. The issue before you today is should a budget change proposal be submitted for courts with court-provided security cost increases, and if so, what approach should be taken to request funding for those courts. And I believe Sean Landry's on the phone. He chaired this working group to deal with this issue. Sean, are you prepared to walk us through this?
Sure.
Thank you.
So we, the subcommittee met with the Trial Court Budget Advisory Group back in September, and we talked about a survey that we were going to submit to the trial courts, trying to get better data to support the possibility of moving forward with a spring BCP. We did do that, and the subcommittee met on 12/4 to review the survey results. And before we get into the recommendations, I just wanted Patrick to walk us through some of the highlights of the survey, and then I'll walk you through the recommendations that we have under this item. Patrick?
Yes, thanks, Sean. There was a survey that was sent out to the courts who have court-provided security on October 27th, and we had 28 courts that actually responded to the survey out of the 38 courts that have court-provided security. Based on the results of that survey, we identified an amount of $2.7 million that for courts to maintain the status quo level of 1011 security. However, there were 12 courts that actually identified reductions to no additional funding provided since 1011, but only half those courts actually identified an amount of what it would cost to have the status quo of the 1011 security level. And when I'm talking about this 1011 security level, I'm referring to when criminal justice realignment occurred in 2011. The funding for sheriff provided security was transferred to the counties, and so the amount that trial courts' budgets were reduced was around $485 million, and a total of $41 million for courts who had historically provided court-provided security stayed in their budgets. So the working group reviewed the results last week and identified that there are still some follow-up that needs to be done for some of those courts. As I previously mentioned, only 6 identified the status quo cost, so we need to go back out to some of those courts. That should be done in the next few weeks, and I believe we'll be providing an update in January to the Budget Advisory Committee of what the final costs would be.
So thank you, Patrick. And just to walk through the conversation we had at the subcommittee level and the options available to us, let me walk you through the options. The first option is to basically do nothing. Do not submit a spring BCP and maintain status quo. The second option is to actually submit a spring BCP, based on that $2.7 million figure that Patrick identified, and that is to maintain, that's the number in order to maintain status quo as of 2010. That's the amount of money courts would need to maintain that level. Now, a couple things on the 2.7. We discussed moving forward with that number because the courts are hurting now. They need money to maintain status quo. So really option one was not really an option for us because courts do need the money that was identified in the survey. Now, we want to reach out to the courts again because we want to close some gaps that we see in the survey. We want to be inclusive of all the courts and make sure that they answered the questions properly and also reach out to the courts that did not respond before we move forward with any number for Spring BCP. So option two contemplates that. Option three takes it a step further. In option three, we contemplate not only the $2.7 million, but we also contemplate developing a growth funding factor. And the thought behind that is rather than keep on having to go back and asking for additional money every year for increased costs related to security, court-provided security, let's have it some sort of factor or index built into that. And that's an item that we'd still need to work on, and we'd bring that recommendation back to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee in January. So is that amount based on what the sheriff receives? And they are based on, it's part of a formula based on revenue. Over the last 5 years, I think they've received an average of about 2.4 average increase over those years. Or do we base it on something else? So that's an outstanding item. The other outstanding item is, what number do we attach that to? Do we attach that increase to the $40 million, which is the original amount of money that courts received at realignment, or is there another number? In reviewing some of the survey results, that number may change, that $40 million, because there are new courthouses being built, security costs in some cases are being reduced because of a consolidated new courthouse. Some courthouses have closed down. So there's a lot of factors at play that we have to ferret out with that, where we hang that number on, whether it's a $40 million or some other reduced amount. The other factor that we still need to consider is if we do achieve some sort of growth factor, should the new money that we get be restricted to only court-provided security? So we're still looking at that issue and would bring back a recommendation in January. So option three goes a little bit beyond just a mere growth factor. It contemplates the issues that I also talked about for 16-17. So any of the subcommittee members want to add anything to that? Otherwise, that concludes my report. And our recommendation is option three.
Anything from any of the other working group members? Any questions for Sean or the group that worked on this?
So Sean, this is Judge Clay. So option three is more consistent with just like the group is doing on with the dependency council. In the sense that you're going forward to try to address the budget issues that are going to come in the years to come. Is that right?
Yes, I think that's right. And like I said, the thought behind option three is rather than go back year after year and ask for additional money for shortfalls we know that we're going to have, let's include some sort of growth factor.
Well, I move we adopt option three. This is Don Clay.
Second, Walsh.
Second by Walsh.
Yes.
Any further discussion, questions on this issue?
This is Judge Good. I just have a question.
Yep.
If talking about a percentage as growth factor, how does that account for needs that might be occasioned by opening new courthouses, more of a jump in need rather than just a steady percentage?
There's currently $1 million in the budget for a process whereby courts with new facilities are able to request funding, I think, with their counties. It's not for, obviously, the court costs, but it is for the sheriff's costs. But I think that it's a fair point. To what extent would there be any court costs with new facilities that are outside of the sheriff's program?
So I'm understanding this to be court-provided security costs
mm-hmm.
for those counties that are still providing their own security costs. I don't know if any of them are opening new courthouses, but I would just think that in option three, the formula for increase or the consideration of increase will have to consider wholly new needs as opposed to just percentage increases. If for example, there are new judgeships created, that's going to create an increase in need rather than just a percentage increase.
Yeah, and judgeships have typically included a security component. I mean, it's been for bailiffs, but we can argue, obviously, that there are needs at the trial court level to the extent that that thing is not every court operates the same fashion. In some cases, there are courts that have their security entirely provided by sheriffs, and there's obviously the Trinity and Shastas that have court staff do it all, and then there's mixes in between.
Any other questions, comments, discussion? All in favor of the motion to adopt option three, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, the motion carries. Thank you, Sean, and the work group for your work on this and your continued work on this.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda, item number four, children's waiting room distributions, that item has been pulled from the agenda. We're not going to address it today. It wasn't quite ready. So we'll address that in our January meeting. Item five, funding for new workload due to Prop 47. This is a discussion item. There are some materials beginning on page 12 of your packet. I believe we have Shelley Curran on the line to walk us through this issue. I know we have a criminal realignment subcommittee chaired by Judge Wesley and David Yamasaki. I think we're going to lose Judge Wesley to a well-deserved vacation within the next couple of days here, but I believe David has talked with Shelley, and they'll be prepared to jump in should new funding for this arrive out of the governor's budget. But is Shelley on the line?
Yes, I am, Judge.
Go right ahead.
Sure. Thanks, everyone. So I just wanted to provide you, along with Zlatko, an update on things that are happening in terms of working with the governor's office in an attempt to get the trial court some money for this new added workload under Proposition 47. So when it became pretty clear that the voters were going to adopt 47 in the last election, we began conversations in earnest with the Department of Finance and explained to them that this was going to be potentially a very, very significant amount of work for trial courts, in order to handle both the resentencing of individual offenders who are currently serving their sentences and then this whole issue around reclassifying those for people who have already completed their sentences. So when we began these conversations with them, they asked us immediately to look at how the estimate was made for the work that the trial courts assumed under criminal justice realignment. So the added work that the trial courts got to handle all of the parole revocation hearings, they wanted us to use that same methodology and come up with a number, and so we did. And we used the data that the Legislative Analyst's Office put together, which was based on Department of Justice data. They estimated that 40,000 individuals a year are currently being sentenced to one of these crimes that before Proposition 47 would have been a felony offense that will now be a misdemeanor. And so to err on the side of being conservative, we said, okay, if the, you know, most of these people are on felony probation, and that's about a three-year term. So if we go back 3 years and we take that 40,000 number and we multiply it by 3 years, we're talking about 120,000 offenders who potentially could be eligible for that resentencing aspect of this. Then we applied the information from, and we assumed one hearing per person, and that's taking into account that there are going to be some offenders who actually have one hearing, others who will have no hearings because some will stipulate, or in some instances there might be multiple hearings that are necessary. So we went back to the methodology that was used when we came up with that realignment estimate, and the dollar amount that we came up with was $34.5 million. That's based upon an average of 15 minutes per hearings. Simultaneously, we were told from the, by the Department of Finance and the Governor's Office that they wanted us to collect data as much as we could from trial courts in terms of getting our arms around this new added court workload. So when I spoke, Zacco and I spoke at, or Arturo Castro, excuse me, and I spoke at a recent Court Executive Advisory Committee meeting. Coming out of that meeting, we had 18 courts volunteer to fill out a survey and help us develop a survey, and we've done that. We're going to get that survey out to all of the trial courts within the next couple of days and ask that courts fill those out, the surveys out once a month. And again, it's just trying to get our arms around what impact this is on the courts. We are having conversations very regularly, either via email or conversations with the Department of Finance on what's happening in the trial courts, and so the information that people have provided to date has been great. In terms of, you know, the length of time it's taking for the hearings, we estimated 15 minutes, and that seems to be true based upon the data that we've received from the courts to date. So at this point, one thing I also want to mention, and that we made very, very clear to Department of Finance, is that $34.5 million estimate that we provided them does not take into account any work associated with reclassification. We just said to them we were not in a position whatsoever to get our arms around what work that might mean for the trial courts, because I don't think anyone has an idea of how of the magnitude of that potential workload, and so we said that we would have to come back to them at some point with that. We also pushed back when conversations began about court savings, and should we be talking about court savings at the same time that we're talking about these costs. We pushed back on that and said we didn't think so, because for two primary reasons. One is the savings, or the work associated with implementing Prop 47, the resentencing and the reclassification of individual offenders, is completely separate and apart from any regular court workload that they have. So you all are going to go back and have to have a second bite at the apple for all of these people that that folks thought were done. And so that's one thing. And then in terms of savings, we don't know, and we are very careful to include the word potential, because I think so much of that is going to hinge upon what happens at the local level. You know, how are district attorneys going to respond to this? How are charging patterns going to could they potentially change? Are we going to see more trials for misdemeanors now because there's less to lose? All of these things that we just don't have a sense yet of what is going to happen. That being said, the director of the Department of Finance is required as part of the initiative to certify the amount of state savings, and so we are going to be asked at some point, and I don't know what it's going to look like, but about any potential savings that are coming from the trial courts. So at this point, Zacco, I don't know if you have anything that you want to add before we get to questions, but we're in a bit of a waiting pattern. They're finishing up their budgets now, Department of Finance is, and so we will know something in early January, and then at that point, as Judge Earl said, we will work in earnest with all of you again to try to come up with, if funding actually materializes, to try to come up with recommendations for you all to consider to move on to the council.
Yeah, a few things. We did raise the issue that, you know, workload is happening now. Here, a point of fact that your fund balance policy has taken an opportunity for the courts to, trial courts to manage this workload, and therefore there are clearly, you know, impacts on court operations in them absorbing this workload at the moment. We have been pushing them to get us current year resources. We don't know to what extent they will or will be able to do that. To the extent they do support funding, we've just made it clear that here's another problem with this 1%. There was no ability to use a sort of buffer these costs with our fund balances. We know that the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation is seeking funding as well. It's unclear to what extent local justice partners are approaching the Department of Finance as a result of this. Obviously, there's work also at the local level associated with this. But, you know, we are doing what we can. We started right away, letting DOF know, and I think to some extent we got them to pay attention to this, because at first they really didn't have it on their radar, and we were contacting them before the initiative passed. So I think we've done a good job of bringing the issue forward to DOF, and this is just one of those things where, it happens quickly, and we're trying to represent everybody in the branch here and getting a funding number out there. Clearly, there's a lot of resources that are needed, and we're hopeful that they do see the need to fund this workload. And in the long term, we will work with them, obviously, to see what the overall impacts of this are. But in the short term, there is a tremendous amount of work that we know you're doing. And I think even last night, we passed on some information to DOF about the San Diego court, who was willing to provide information about their statistics. So we're doing all we can, and we're hopeful that they see this is something that they need to fund.
Judge Earl, this is David Yamasaki. If I could just add a couple thoughts.
Sure. Sure.
The work that the council staff started providing was done well in advance of the passage of 47, and they were very much ahead of the curve, and I did appreciate getting brought into some of the conversations that were taking place about the prospective potential workload that we would be seeing. So the number that Shelley had shared with us about the potential impact fiscally and the target that we're shooting for, I think is very reasonable given what we're already seeing right now. So I do appreciate all the work that she and the rest of the folks have put in to support them and get them prepared for an ask that fits within the needs that we will be seeing. So thanks.
And we have briefed Judge Earl just to make sure that we're at least, we're on it, as we are going along, keeping folks aware of what's happening.
This is Sherry Carter, and I have some concerns with the questions on the questionnaire, because I guess another way to say it is I think it would be great to see the model that created the estimates that you're talking about, Shelley. I've never heard 15 minutes before. Is it just one court? And I'm not really sure how long you're thinking we're going to do these questionnaires, because really what these should turn into is a time study to be part of RAS for the staffing component, and maybe that's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, sure. I think you raise an important point. What we you know, talked about initially, as Blacko said, we got this request from Department of Finance and had to turn around really, really quickly with something. And so that's what we did. But I think in terms of future court workload, there is a finite end to, you know, Prop 47, the ability to petition the court for resentencing and reclassification ends in 3 years. And if Prop 36 is any indication of what might happen, the majority of that workload happens towards the beginning, as Zlatko was talking about. I think in terms of RAS and workload going forward, and I don't know if Leah is on the phone or not, but I think that she's had some conversations with people about trying to capture the impact of this in terms of developing the WAFA model.
Okay, so I guess I just, did you say this is going to be referred to a committee that will include judges and CEOs rather than kind of an informal approach? Is that going to go somewhere to kind of ensure we're on the right track?
The allocation of the funding, yes. I think the allocation of the funding will go to, assuming there is funding, I think
yeah,
it will go to the, pardon?
Oh, I meant, the funding for certain would come to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. I'm talking about the questionnaire.
If you think there is a need to send it to a specific committee, we had asked the 20 courts who had volunteered to fill out that survey and included a couple of other courts as well to provide input on that survey just in the interest of getting it out as quickly as possible. Do you know, Judge Earl or others, do you think the survey needs to go to another specific committee?
Has the survey already been sent out?
No, so one version of the survey was sent out to 18 courts who volunteered to fill it out, and then we had a conference call where we followed up with those courts to get input on the survey, and people provided some input, and I think there were, you know, 15 to 16 courts who were represented on that, and then following that, we sent out the survey based upon the conversations that we'd had to about 18 different courts and said, are we asking the right questions, does this capture it, and we're getting feedback from them now.
I think, you know, you can always use the, and it might be helpful to use the our Criminal Realignment Subcommittee to discuss the survey and going forward with it. I think that wouldn't hurt.
Okay.
Does that satisfy your interest, Sherry? Is Sherry still on the phone?
Well, yes, I am. I'm sorry. I had you on mute. I apologize.
Okay. I have a question. This is Judge Wesley. Do I continue on that committee even though I'm not a presiding judge anymore? So if you're going to refer to the committee, I'd love to be involved, but I want to know that I'm on that committee.
You'll remain on the committee through the end of the year at least, but I understood you were leaving for vacation in another week.
I am, but then what happens? Are you going to have to form a new committee is what I'm asking, because I think I was co-chair of that committee.
Yeah, you are. And what we would use the existing committee until our membership changed in January. So if we right now we would have to use the existing committee through the end of the year.
Yeah, and I will be gone. So that's what I was asking.
Okay. But there are other judicial officers on that that subcommittee.
And Judge Earl, this is Spocko. I would add that this is the methodology at the moment. If, as our experience provides more information, obviously I would be interested in updating the methodology so it properly captures, you know, what's going on, and most especially if it proves that the funding is far insufficient, we need to go back to the Department of Finance. So this is what the initial effort is, and we've told the Department of Finance, you know, this is our best guess, but as we get real data, you know, we need to sit down and confirm and look at that methodology and the way in which we arrived at those dollars. So this is not like a set in stone. This is, for the moment, given the lightning speed at which this is happening relative to, you know, our standard process. But, again, we're always looking at those things as we go forward.
Shelley, maybe if you could maybe get on the phone with Judge Wesley and David. Judge Wesley, when is your official last day in the office?
Friday.
But he's free this afternoon.
I'm available the rest of the week.
Shelley, if you and David and Judge Wesley could get on the phone so Judge Wesley could provide you with his preliminary thoughts on this, and then the subcommittee could get involved thereafter. I know Judge Wesley won't be available, but David's the co-chair, and they could start working with them.
Yes. Yep, I'll reach out to both of you as soon as we're done with this call.
Any other questions for Shelley? All right, then we'll move on then to agenda item 7. The material is on page 11 of your packet. I just wanted to update you that in October, the Judicial Council approved an amendment to California Rule of Court 10.64, defining Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee membership. Important to note is the amendment changed the definition of, or clarified the definition of, presiding judge. It now reads that for purposes of this rule, presiding judge means a current presiding judge or an immediate past presiding judge. It also eliminated language that called for co-chairs, which included a PJ and the director of judicial counsel, finance director. So it eliminated that language so that there's only one chair and it's a presiding judge. So that is an update on that. Any questions on that? All right. I did have one other update I wanted to bring to you. This is an issue that I've occasionally brought back to you, and then we'll conclude our call. And that is just an update on the work of that some of our committee members are doing in collaboration with the Judicial Council Technology Committee and some of our court information officers throughout the state to look at the IMF deficit, and specifically working with the Judicial Council IT Service Office and CIOs to find ways to reduce IT expenditures funded from the IMF. As you may recall, we have a significant deficit looming within the IMF. It'll be it's estimated now to be approximately $15 million at the end of this fiscal year and grow to approximately $35.9 million the following year. And the largest portion of the IMF budget is IT expenditures, which are almost 50% of the total IMF expenditures. So this group, and on this group from our advisory committee besides myself, is Judge Slough and Sherry Carter, who chair the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee. Debbie Norrie, who's the CEO from Plumas, is also working with this work group. And really it's just been a discussion and analysis of the various programs funded by the IMF, determining what are the needs and priorities of the trial courts related to IT services that are funded from the IMF, and how can we reduce costs for some of these programs and services. Some of the programs that have been evaluated include the Land-WAN Refresh Program, Criminal Court Protective Restraining Order Program, CCPOR, CCTC, which is the server for CCMS, and other programs like Phoenix and maybe Sustain, I don't remember. They've also looked at some of the Oracle Enterprise Licenses, Adobe Lifecycle, but really to try to understand their costs and how we might reduce those costs. The working group is prepared to bring a recommendation to this committee in January. I anticipate that the recommendations will include short, medium, and long-term actions and saving opportunities. And I believe the recommendations could range from continue to fund a proposed program in the budget, or reduce funding, eliminate the program, postpone the expenditure on the program, or align with Judicial Council technology plans for certain programs. As you know, they're looking at the costs of CCMS V3 and how to eliminate providing support, financial support for those costs in the future. So I just wanted to keep you up to date that group has met by telephone three or four times. Some of their preliminary recommendations and their principles, they've come up with principles for these recommendations, which include continuing investment in maintaining critical service such as LAN, WAN, and CCPOR. They've been shared with a subset of CIOs, and the feedback from the CIOs was positive. So they've had that initial response. And like I said, I expect that they will make a presentation to you in January on recommendations regarding IT expenses. But I don't expect that their recommendation will come close to meeting the $15 million deficit we have, so I anticipate that the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee will need to convene in early February and begin making their way line item by line item through the revenues and expenditures of the IMF. And there's lots of programs in there that have value to the trial courts, and we have to make some pretty difficult choices. So that's just an update on that. More information to be revealed in January, and I'm happy to take any questions on that if anyone has any.
Treasurer, this is Jake Chatters.
Yes.
So on just a maybe following up on that, so the Court Technology Advisory Committee met last week to develop its to start working on its annual plan for next calendar year. And so one of the topics that came up as part of that discussion were some anticipated sort of projects that need to move forward based on what may come out of that Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee. The one that comes to mind is related to looking at hosting solutions. You know, right now there's a CCTC. If there's a desire to change that from a cost standpoint, then there'll need to be some work on the technology side. And so that led to a broader, a brief discussion, but a discussion related to how are we going to deal with these types of things going forward, and that ultimately likely the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee is a budget committee. We'll need additional information from sort of the business side, in this case the technology side, on what might be priorities. And so just to give an update to everybody, that discussion is ongoing related to technology governance and how to make sure the technology group is saying, well, here's our top five priorities, say, and that's coming over to the budget committee to say, okay, well, that's great. We can afford only four of them, and it may only be one, two, three, and five based on money. And so that'll be a transition. It's not going to happen overnight. I expect it'll take many – it'll take probably the whole year or maybe even more to start the transition to that model, but just want to let you know that is happening.
All right. Thank you, Jake. Any other questions or comments? Any other issues anyone wanted to raise? All right. Thank you, everybody, for your time. We stand adjourned until our January meeting.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.